It's that time again. We welcome you back to your favorite podcast, Cave of Solitude. My name, see what I did there? My name is Daphne J, Lady J, Daphne the Amazing. Pick one. And we also have Sir
Eric Anthony here with you. We are officially back for our season two, back from a summer vacation. People were starting to wonder if we were ever going to come back.
Well, we deserve a break.
We do deserve a break. I was starting to wonder
if we were... Take it easy, fans. We haven't left. We're still here. Hold on to your panties.
Your panties?
Your panties.
I was wondering if we were ever going to come back. But it's only fitting that for our premiere of season two of The Cave of Solitude, that we started off with a lightning bolt strong enough to power 1.21 gigawatts into a flux capacitor, if you will. So, naturally, episode one.
We're sending you back to the future!
You built a time machine? Out of a DeLorean?
The way I see it, if you're gonna build a time machine into a car, why not do it in style?
This... Hello? Hello? Anybody home? Hey! Think McFly, think!
Yes. Yes. I'm George. George McFly. I'm your density.
So, Daph J, after that long intro of the Back to the Future score and sound bites, let's get right into this. This was the year of Back to the Future in a way. They had a Back to the Future Day that just passed, October 21st, the anniversary of Back to the Future 2 when they go into the future. How was your Back to the Future Day or week? Any interesting things happened during that time?
Well, prior to the actual day, mm-hmm. the Back to the Future Day, we got to experience with our wild card and Little Sparrow.
Yes.
The viewing of Back to the Future Part 1 with a live orchestra.
At the Roy Thompson Hall in Toronto. Incredible.
It was actually pretty cool. I was excited for it, but I was more than what I expected. And I was really, really happy. It was really awesome to see everything and everybody playing on cue with the film. They yeah. added extra music in parts of the film where it was quiet. For example, in the very beginning, where all you just see is Marty's shoes and you see the clocks and Doc's experiments all going everywhere doing stuff. So they amped you up.
Yeah, they really got you right into it.
Yeah.
I always loved that soundtrack to the movie. I always loved the score. But I would never in the past have put it in the same category as, you know, like the Star Wars or things like Superman. Stuff that is so iconic that mm-hmm. as soon as you hear it, people automatically know what it is. Indiana Jones even. But after seeing the movie with that music, I have so much more appreciation for how wonderful mm-hmm. that movie was scored. Mm-hmm. And I know this is October 21st, 2015 was the Back to the Future 2 connection that everybody was really excited about. To be alive, to see that day come to fruition and compare the future to what you saw in a movie when yeah. you were a kid is really fun. But for this episode and it being the 30th year, which makes it fitting because they went 30 years into the future, mm-hmm. I'd like to hopefully focus on all three of the movies at some point. But I really want to focus on the original Back to the Future film. It is easily, as I've said before, my all-time favorite movie. Mm-hmm. And I know you know that, and almost anyone who knows me knows that.
You're wearing the t-shirt.
I'm wearing the t-shirt right now.
I'm not lying. It's really happening right now.
And people who know me know which t-shirt I'm wearing. But for you, because you know how much I like the movie, and we'll get into it in a little bit when we discuss it, but what's your feelings towards the movie? Was it tainted because of how much I liked it, or has it changed now after seeing it on the big screen with the orchestra? Like, what's your feelings towards it now?
Well, I have to admit that I was never really a huge fanatic for Back to the Future. I hate to say it, but I only ever appreciate it when I'm watching it. So, you know, when you see the little details that are happening within the film, the fact that when they go back to certain scenes and I don't know, like, I can't explain it because I don't know the movie as well as you do. I only know it when I see it. Mm-hmm. I only know how special that a particular scene is when I'm watching it. But I think I've expressed it to you, like, I'm not that type that I'm in the mood to watch Back to the Future. Mm-hmm. I'm never in that mood. But watch it, I'm like so excited because it's such a good movie.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of, I don't know, not clues, but there's a lot of
Easter eggs.
Yeah. Within the film. Yeah. And this was the first time that I've ever seen Back to the Future on a big screen. I've never done that. I don't know, like, my parents would take me to the movies, but I didn't know what I was watching.
Well,
when that came out, I particularly do not remember seeing it. So.
And no one would expect us to because we were a year old.
Right.
So.
Right. Point taken. But, you know, going forward, though, knowing how kind of thing this movie, the impact that this movie had on everything. There was part two, then there was part three. Like, I didn't see any of these movies.
They had a ride at Universal
Studios. Never went on it. I never went on it.
They had a cartoon.
They never watched it. You know what I'm saying?
You missed that sort of experience.
Yeah. So it's kind of like, this is my
discovery.
Yeah. Although I know, I've known about the movie for years and I've seen it. I've seen it.
You appreciate it for that. It's a good movie, but not to that level of impact that other people.
Not like you.
Okay. I don't know too many people who feel how I feel, but I don't know what this was one of those things that, for me too, this Roy Thompson Hall showing with the Toronto Orchestra, Toronto Symphony Orchestra, was my first time seeing it on a big screen. And I've seen this movie easily over 100 times, if probably more, through my entire life. But seeing it on the big screen, I was so excited. I literally was acting and feeling like a kid again. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't. It was one of those things where it wasn't forced. You know, sometimes you act like a kid to be funny, to be forced. This was actual giddiness inside of me that I couldn't contain. I was a little embarrassed. And when the movie started and the music was playing, I kind of got, like, not to sound savvy, but a little emotional, like teary-eyed, just to see, be in a room full of people who were experiencing the same thing that I was all these years.
Did you always feel like you were the only one that appreciated this movie to?
Growing up, yes. Growing up, like, I knew that people loved it and it was part of pop culture and it was really popular. Like, they made a ride for it at an amusement park. So naturally, it's big. But you don't, like, all of my, this was a movie that all of my family loved. Like, from my parents to my grandparents. Like, it was just a family experience. But nobody obsessed over it like I did. I would watch these movies constantly and never got bored. At 3 years old, I had it memorized.
I know, we have footage.
Yeah. And I don't understand how that happened because I was still too young to really understand all the themes and concepts of the movie. But this was my childhood movie. Some kids have Aladdin or Lion King or some Disney movie. For me, it was Back to the Future for some reason. So to grow up and like when I went to Comic-Con and I saw someone cosplay as Marty McFly, I thought I would be the only one to want to do that. Or someone who built, like people who started building DeLoreans because they loved it so much. Then I realized like, okay, this is huge. Now we just saw a documentary of there being not only fan clubs, but fan clubs of people who build DeLoreans and places where they reenact the whole city. They recreate the set because people love it so much. I didn't know that. So to know that...
Yeah, it has a real significant fan base. Like it's...
I didn't know the impact that it had on people's lives.
Yeah.
Like I know Star Wars mm-hmm. has that generational thing. I know things like even the first Superman movie or stuff like that. But it makes me feel so happy to know that Back to the Future has this cult community as well, this cult following of people that love it so much. So now that it's 30 years, it's like, again, fresh for me, having seen it on the big screen with our friends. So originally, when it had come out, they were shopping around for a company to release it, right? And they went to Disney.
Yeah.
Originally, which would have been interesting because you kind of think of it, yeah, okay, I can see the why someone would recommend to go to Disney, but Disney shot it down right away because they said it was a movie
about incest,
which it's not. I want to quickly say what the movie synopsis is about before we continue. So, Back to the Future, directed by Robert Zemeckis and written by Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale, starring Michael J. Fox, Christopher Lloyd, Leah Thompson, and Thomas F. Wilson as Biff.
Who apparently is a really nice guy.
Apparently he's like the nicest guy in the world. So Back to the Future released July 3rd, 1985. It's about a young man, Marty McFly, who's accidentally sent 30 years into the past in a time-traveling DeLorean invented by his friend, Dr. Emmett Brown, and must make sure his high school-aged parents unite in order to save his own existence. And he's only got one shot to get back to his own timeline, 1985. So that's the synopsis of the movie. If you're listening to the podcast, I'm sure you've watched the movie or have some sort of affection towards it. So they finally go back with Steven Spielberg, who initially was the person who loved the idea of the movie. Robert Zemeckis and Bob Gale go to him to produce it. And becomes this huge hit in 1985. Looking back at it now, 30 years later, movie that was grossed, I think, $200 million back then, which was a big box office hit. What are your thoughts on it, the overall experience? What do you appreciate about this movie now, looking back?
I kind of like how they got the life in 2015 pretty bang on. I think that was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that...
Well, there's flat screen TVs and there's multiple channels, and I think the sister or somebody's wearing goggles. Or no, Marty's his son is wearing goggles, and it's like he's kind of... It's like the iPad, I guess. Just like concentrated on technology.
It's true.
No one's talking to each other.
Instant information.
Yeah.
They are creating hoverboards.
There's already like, you know, we had the clap on, clap off lights in like what, the 80s yeah. or 90s?
Yeah.
Like, and now you can just walk into a room and things happen.
Yeah, you can give commands and it does it.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that's kind of cool that they...
And a lot of the other stuff they did too in the future was purposely done to be way out there and funny so that when we watch it now, we would laugh at it. Mm-hmm. Because they said if we make it dark and dystopian, how every other story was told about the future, mm-hmm. where it's all grim and gritty, it's a downer. So they wanted to make it as bright and fun and silly as you possibly can make. Flying cars, kind of like the Jetsons. But they did actually get a lot of stuff right. But particularly with the original movie.
Oh.
What is your overall feelings toward it now? Having 30 years of of it being released, of it being in existence, seeing the impact that it's had on people?
I don't know. I don't think my interest is going to be as deep because I don't have your knowledge. I just think it's a nice movie. I think I like the idea that there's two unlikely characters that have some kind of kinship. He's obviously, Marty's obviously a lot younger than Doc is. And yet, they're each other's boy. You know what I mean? Like, they're friends. And so much so that Marty feels pain and risks his own life to make sure that Doc doesn't lose his. You know what I mean? He tries to save him. He tries to warn him. And vice versa, right? Then any Doc in any of the current times that they're living in, they immediately have an affection for this kid and they want to help him accomplish whatever it is that he needs to do. So I like that character development, I guess, between these two unlikely people.
That's a great point, because the one thing that's really awesome about Back to the Future is everything is set up. From the first scenes, the first things you see in this movie, you got the clocks. So you know that Doc is all about precision and time. He's obsessed with time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Right?
He's obsessed with it. And then, you know, in his house, you see all these clues about his little bit of his backstory. And you see the camera set up there that he's got to pick up after. And the plutonium hidden under his bed. And there's the Toyota for the Toyota thing that there's an advertisement for it. And you see that Marty wants a truck. But the one thing that's never explained is their friendship. How do these two guys, unlikely guys, become friends? The biggest two characters, like the most important characters in the movie, you never find out their backstory. That's everything right. else,
yeah,
down to the details, is explained to you.
It's true.
But this isn't. And it's, I think that's, I actually like that because it kind of shows a certain, if you tell a story today, you're going to think Doc is a creep. You're going to think he's some sort of weirdo that hangs around with a child, or why is a child hanging around with a man that's 65 years old? But it's kind of a nice lesson to say that you can be friends with an older person.
Yeah, and you know, I think they've told that story before in other films, but it's always like a grumpy old man who, you know, he's a drunk, or he's just like, you know, a war vet who's just in a bad mood, who has no lust for life or anything, and everything just annoys him. But then there's this one kid that is just as annoying, but there's a backstory, but it comes from a dark place as opposed to these two. It just happened.
Yeah,
it just so happens that just, they're friends there.
and people in the town think that he's a crazy guy. They just say, oh, that guy's trouble, like Strickland.
Mm-hmm.
He's a real nutcase. You hang out with him, you're getting in big trouble. But Jennifer knows who Doc is.
Yeah,
like there isn't, the people who know him, he's not threatening to them.
And I think it's a good life lesson, I guess, to have associations outside of your age bracket, because they teach you things that you wouldn't know about.
Yeah.
And that helps you grow as a person, too. It opens up your mind to different things. It opens up for other conversation. I like that. I like their friendship.
Yeah, I think they're such a awesome 1-2 punch that you think of their age, it doesn't match, but together on the screen, it's like, I don't know, there isn't too many other duos in a movie that Marty and Doc, like.
Yeah, and I think too, Marty was never ashamed his friendship with him.
Never.
It didn't matter that everybody called him a crazy person. He didn't care. There was no I guess that was also to a
subliminal.
Whatever. I guess message that it doesn't matter who you choose to be friends with, as long as I don't know. Like there's no discrimination. I guess.
Age discrimination. And they go to, what I like too is that they go to the limits for each other. Marty's willing to meet him in the middle of the night to see his latest experiment. Doc is hanging off the edge of a clock tower at the end of it, risking his life to help his friend.
Yeah.
That kinship is never explained in detail, but you feel the sincerity of it between the two actors. Like it's one of those things that I never gets old for me.
I agree.
The dialogue in this movie for a child at 3 years old, like I was, to memorize entire scenes, the dialogue I always felt was like listening to music. The way everything is said, the tone, the physicality of how they say it, it's so perfectly timed, and everybody is responding to each other in such a way that the entire movie, to me, is just endless quotables. I've never seen can't think of another movie that's quite like that.
I say we should play some of this music.
What? You're George McFly.
Yeah, who are you?
Hey, what's this little boy? Who's wearing that one? Why are you bigger than me? Hi, cowboy. Have a respect for yourself. Don't you know that people walk over here now? Well, we're here, like, look at me. No, this one's a watching boy. No, sir, I'm a mix that I'm going to make school. I want to end my piece of my... This one is going to be yellow. Man!
Yes, yes, that was a 3-year-old Eric Anthony back in 1987 that was on that recording. I wasn't lying. I really
you
had that.
Did you even know how to read?
No.
That was just memory.
That was just, that's how much I had watched the movie. It was, look, thinking back of it on it, it's strange. Like, you wouldn't think of a 3-year-old today, let's say, watching, I don't know, Winter Soldier that many times. Like, what would a 3-year-old today watch that was the equivalent of Back to the Future then? It just, I don't know what it was that captured me. I don't know if it was Marty, if it was definitely the car. That's a whole other character in the movie.
That's true.
That car was fantastic. I mean, if you're gonna build a time machine out of a car, why not do it with some style, right? And when you see that the truck open up at the back and the thing lower, it's just, that in itself got a standing ovation.
It really did. Even at the orchestra, I liked how they encouraged audience participation.
Yeah,
like, they're
that was
like,
great.
He was like, you know what? This is in a theater where you have to hush the person next to you. You cheer.
It was like
when
being
you
at a concert.
See, yeah, when you see the hero, you cheer. If you see a goon, you can boo him. We don't care. That amps us up. And it made the experience even more exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it amped it up.
Yeah, that... Like I was saying before we played that clip, the dialogue in this movie, it's like everything is said almost in a way to make you remember it. And it happens even throughout the other movies too. I mean, we're not really focusing on those ones, but in part two, you love when Biff meets himself in 1955.
That, I think, is one of my favorite parts.
It's hilarious, but everything is said with this inflection. Each character has a thing that they do and say that is instantly recognizable. Like, think of how many people go, hello, anybody home? Think, McFly, think, right? We all know that line, and we say it to each other in regular conversation to be, you know, just, hey, hello, anybody home? Or how about Mr. Strickland?
You're a slacker.
And what does Biff say to himself that you like so much back in 1955 when he sees the old version?
So, the old guy, old Biff, is in young Biff's car, and he's like, oh, you're an idiot, you're never gonna marry her, you're never gonna get her if you keep talking to her like that, or whatever.
You've always had a way with women.
Oh, there you go. And then Biff realizes that there's this guy sitting in his car, and he's like, get the hell out of my car, old man! The way he says it.
Right?
It's just funny. Like, I can't say it the way, but when you hear it, it's so good.
But people listening know exactly the part you're talking about. And throughout the entire movie of the original Back to the Future, everything Doc says, everything Marty says, it's just all delivered with this, I don't know, instant quotability. Rewatch the movie and think about Doc explaining. And it's heavy dialogue. Like, it's a lot of words being said.
And that's why it kind of amazes me. I mean, I think it's adorable. But it amazes me that a 3-year-old would know, like, back to back to back to back, everything that's being said by multiple people.
Yeah.
It wasn't, it's not like today. Like, they have, yeah, there's movies that are pretty great, but not much is being said. It's more explosions for half an hour to 45 minutes. And then all of a sudden someone's, are you okay? Like, that's it.
Well, we recently watched a movie with some kids, Guardians of the Galaxy, that is tailor-made for that age bracket. They said there's too much talking in it.
They were
devising a plan of how to beat the bad guys. It was too much talking. In this movie, the first 25 minutes, it's just people setting things up in conversation,
yeah.
Detailed.
Yeah.
From when Strickland meets Marty, that confrontation nose to nose, to Jennifer and Marty talking about how he shouldn't give up on being in a band.
Mm-hmm.
You start to see characteristics of Marty. Like, there's so much exposition being given. When they're at the dinner table in Marty's house, the mom tells the entire story. And you're thinking, like, okay, obviously this is being set up for what's going to happen in the movie. But it pays off so nicely.
It does. There's a lot of payoffs in the movie.
Yeah, and she tells him about the enchantment under the sea dance. Like, it sets the table for everything that the character is going to have to do.
Even if you don't know that it's being set up, everything just falls into place in this movie.
Right.
Multiple times.
Right.
So it's like, oh, there's another one. And then it makes you want to, like, rewatch it and capture those moments all over again.
Yeah. Even something as insignificant as the Mayor Goldie Wilson, re-elect Mayor Goldie Wilson, Progress is his middle name. Like, you don't know if that's going to come back up in the movie.
Yeah.
And then you see him in the diner.
It seems so obscure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's there.
Yeah.
And so much of this stuff, it's, when you think about it, it's so appropriate. Even product placement. People are like, oh, there's so much product placement in the movie. You got Pepsi, you got Mountain Dew, you've got Burger King, you've got, I can't think of
Toyota.
Toyota, thank you. Texaco, all of these brand names that you see. But it needed to be there. People don't realize this stuff had to be there, because when it goes into the past, those things exist, but they look completely different.
Mm-hmm.
So it really gives you a sense.
That's a good point, yeah.
It gives you a sense of that's still Texaco in that same spot 30 years ago, but look, that's how it was then.
Yeah.
When he goes into the cafe, he goes, get me a Pepsi Perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Or a Pepsi Free.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You want a Pepsi, pal? You're going to pay for it. There's still Pepsi. There's still cola. But it made it so that the difference in timeline, people would really experience it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Even the choice of having the time machine as a vehicle. There's been other things in the past that have been time machines, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's been phone booths in Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. There's been portals, all that kind of stuff. But this is the coolest time machine by far.
I think it makes the most logical sense, though.
Because it's in motion.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Yeah.
But it's awesome when he arrives in 1955 on the Peabody Farm.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
And
the kid sees him, shows the comic book, and it's, like, identical with the gull wing doors opening up. Like, everything is the screenplay. You can tell that they really paid attention to detail, and these guys were geeks. They had to be geeks to write it the way they did. Because you can watch it, I think, this is one movie you can watch just casually and enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
But then you can really pay attention to every little detail, and it's worthwhile if you want to.
Yeah, so casual that the creator of Goldbergs, he said that his mother watched the movie and thought the plot was about a son going back in time to spend time with his mom because he loved her so much. Like, where did you get... Only a mother would think that.
Yeah.
But, like, yeah, you can really watch this and not have to break your head about it. But when... I mean, it does encourage you to grasp those Easter eggs.
Yeah, the replay value.
Grasp
the
eggs.
Easter eggs. Search for the Easter eggs.
Oh,
only
what the hell
only
was that?
You. Only
moving on.
Now I lost my thought. Now I'm just thinking of grasping eggs. What was I gonna say now? Continue, say something. I completely forgot. So I had watched this movie, speaking of replay value. I remember my grandmother taking care of babysitting me one time. And I think I had watched the movie 3 times in a row in a day. And she had gotten fed up. She was knitting. They didn't even think she cared. She had to watch me. I don't know why she's watching the movie.
Which nonna was this? On the mom or the dad?
My father's mom. So she, Henrik, that's enough. I don't want to see Back to the Future no more. And I said, no, don't worry. I'm going to play a different movie now. It's called Out of Time. 4 years old, I made up a title.
Shut up.
Yeah, that was associated with the movie.
Shut up. That's right, that was the license plate.
Right.
Yeah.
And she's like, okay, fine. Just as long as it's not Back to the Future anymore. And then it started up again. Oh my goodness, not again. And I was so excited to play it 4 times in a day. It was ridiculous. And my whole world at that time was like Back to the Future and La Bamba for some reason. I don't know why. But I always associated my life with these characters being real in some reality, right? You didn't separate yet. Mm-hmm. I remember I was at a gathering, a family gathering, and the brother, my uncle's future brother-in-law, they weren't anywhere near getting married. I don't even think he was dating his future wife yet. But this kid, he was like a teenager, and I was 3 or 4. I was staring at him the whole night, and I had pegged him. I'm like, I know him. I know him from somewhere. And I finally got my chance. I went up to him, and I tapped him. I said, hey. He goes, you're George McFly. He looked like George McFly to me. I really thought he was him. I said, you're George McFly. And the movie was pretty much in the consciousness of everybody at the time in the 80s, right? He looks at me and goes, yeah, who are you? Like George McFly said to Marty, right? So every time he saw me again growing up, we always had that interplay between us. And he would always do the whole, just not very good with confrontation. And he did it perfect. He obviously didn't look like George McFly as he got older, but as a kid, I'm like, I don't know. I was just constantly in my consciousness that I even approached people that way. It's pretty embarrassing.
That's crazy.
But so we said the movie's full of setups and payoffs. What's your favorite setup and payoff? Whether it's a big one or a small one, there's tons. But which one's your favorite?
I think the setup I appreciate is the fact that Marty is a guitar player. And it seems so insignificant because at the beginning of the movie, it's as though he feels like he's not going to get anywhere with it. But him playing the guitar is so integral to his survival and the survival to his parents.
That's cool.
So
that's cool. That's good.
Yeah. So I think it was, it's significant, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so for it to be a nothing in the beginning of the movie, but to be everything at the end, I think that's pretty, I like that one.
That's a good one. Actually, I knew that was there, but to think of it as you mention it, I'm like, that is a really good one, because it could have just been something that later on when he goes back home, he does get they find out like, hey, you did get the thing to the dance. You better be ready for it.
Right.
But the fact that I like that one as well, I have it written down that, not what you said, but that he essentially invents rock and roll.
Yeah.
Right? The kid who was too darn loud, right, goes to the dance, and Marvin Berry calls his cousin, that new sound you're looking for, and he invents rock and roll, the Chuck Berry song, right? So I thought that was awesome.
Yeah.
Because future isn't disturbed, right? Mm-hmm. The same guy does what needs to be done.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't play the guitar, it's like Marvin Berry says, like, the dance is over.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, well, that's where they dance, and when they dance, they kiss, and if they don't kiss, they don't fall in love, and I'm history, and he plays the guitar. So if you're right, it's everybody's...
And it's such a peak in the movie, too.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
It's, like, he's...
It's he saves his life.
Yeah, well, yeah, of course. But the simple fact that he gets to play at a dance where he was rejected in the beginning. He was told he couldn't.
Yeah.
But he still got the opportunity to. And it was like, yes, they made it. So this is a moment of celebration. So I think that's a peek in the movie for
Whenever
me.
I talk about this movie, I realize it's perfect. It's really a perfect
okay,
movie.
Okay, now, before I ask you that question, because it would only be fair, before we go on, I've heard lots of people say that this is the perfect movie.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with... Like, I mean, I know you just said it, but do you really... Because there's a lot of laws that are broken in regards to time travel. So doesn't that kind of make it a little imperfect?
I think the laws of time travel... Every movie that deals with time travel has to establish some sort of rules. Because it's impossible in any which way you look at it, unless you're going forward.
Mm-hmm.
It's technically a possibility. But in the first movie, at least, there isn't anything that's really done. It's a simple, go back in time, got to get back to your time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what needs to be done. So it's this. The story is more about meeting his parents than the science of time travel. So there isn't so much broken in that, the rules that they make for themselves in the Back to the Future universe,
mm-hmm.
right? But it's a perfect movie in the sense of the way the characters are introduced, the way things are set up for you to see what happens next, even to the minute details. But then the feeling that you get from the resolution of things, there's so much at stake for him. And it's kind of gross in a way that his mom is falling in love
yeah.
with him. But then even being able, the one chance to get back to his time, it's everything in the end makes you feel happy when you leave,
mm-hmm.
right? So the conflict is good. The comedy is right on point. The dialogue between the characters and everybody's performance is great,
mm-hmm.
memorable. There isn't a person on the screen where you're like, meh, they were garbage. The special effects are they feel real, other than the fire burning through Marty's leg and it doesn't actually burn him, but whatever.
Yeah.
So all of those factors, it's pretty close to a flawless film.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't many other movies you can watch that accomplish all of those goals. And then the score and the soundtrack is good on top of it.
Yeah.
This is a time where I always feel like still important today, extremely important, but that's another thing about Back to the Future, the first one. All the music plays an important and integral role in the movie. It's Marty McFly's a guitar player, you got the 50s music, you've
mm-hmm.
got the music at the dance, you've got the music from that's playing on the clock radios or on the radio when he comes back to the future.
Right.
So even this, back then, you think of movie soundtracks of the 80s, they're integral to the how good the movies were. Right? Dirty Dancing, Pretty in Pink,
mm-hmm.
Rocky. They're just as important as those movies were.
Yeah.
And I think that this movie as well accomplishes that. So in all of those respects, I would never have said it in the past that it was a flawless movie, but the more I watch it as an adult, I appreciate more things that they did that as a kid, it was the spectacle. It was
mm-hmm.
the characters. I liked Marty. I liked Doc.
Fair enough. That's interesting. So your peak in the movie?
Peak in the movie. I don't know. I like the one that you brought out. I think that was a really good payoff because it accomplishes so much
mm-hmm.
in that scene, and it's humorous. And then, like I said, he invents rock and roll inadvertently just so he has that opportunity to play at the dance. I liked seeing him knock out Biff. It's an established thing where at the beginning, his father is a broken man with no self-esteem. And then this moment is put there so that he can now be a different man for the rest of his life.
Right.
That later on in the future is the turning point of George McFly.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's a pretty... There's all these things
yeah.
in it that are like... And you know which part I really liked was... As crazy and zany as Doc is, I really like the part where in 1955, where him and Marty have an exchange before Marty goes to the dance, and he says, "You know, I'm really gonna miss you, Marty. You gave me something to shoot for. You gave me a purpose. I'm gonna miss you for 30 years. I'm looking forward to seeing you again." So as zany and as wide-eyed of a scientist he is, almost like an Einstein look, he's got a real sincerity,
yeah,
a real genuineness that they're what each other needs.
You know what I noticed? Not this last viewing, but a couple of watchings ago, is that when Doc is at the clock tower trying to get Marty home, and Marty is taking off in the car, and then Doc realizes he's in the car, he kind of cheers him or screams, and then he blows him a kiss.
Yeah.
And it's not at all... I never saw it as anything inappropriate, but it seemed endearing.
Yeah.
And it was a testament as to what their friendship was. It was genuine.
Yeah.
So I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love seeing Doc and Marty have that. Because in the future, later, when he does live and he puts the note back together, you realize that he's been waiting for this Marty to come back, right? He meets Marty properly, builds the time machine, but he can't let that Marty know that he's already met him.
That's crazy.
Right? He's got to just go along with whatever has to go along, but then he knows that the night he gets shot, he's waiting for Marty to show up. He's been waiting for that friend from before. It's trippy, right?
That's heavy.
Yeah, so that's a part of the movie where Marty's crying because now this Doc that he knew as a young man, now he knows him in a completely different way.
Which is a joke to me because Doc looks the same in all of the movies.
If you watch it in the Blu-ray, you'll see a little bit more of the age in his face.
Yeah.
In 1985, yeah. Mm. And then in the second movie, they make him look old. But then right away they peel off. He goes, "Oh, sorry for the disguise, Marty, but I had to..."
But then the disguise looked exactly like him, no?
But then that's just Christopher Lloyd's regular face. Because he said, "Oh, I got a facelift, I did this." So that eliminates them having to do makeup for an old man the rest of the movie. Because they made him look
younger. But, I mean, in general, though, he looks the same. Well, the hair is the same. Goes,
"Look at me!
I'm old!"
"Thank God I still have my hair," right? Yeah, I always noticed that too. I'm like, it's the same guy. When I was a kid, I couldn't differentiate.
So the premise of this movie, though, or the creator and writer of this movie said that he came up with the idea because he came across his father's yearbook.
Yeah.
And it was the same school that he went to growing up. So it gave him the idea of, like, what would it be like to go to school with your parents?
Yeah.
Have you ever wondered that? Because you went to your parents, middle school and high school, or at least your dad's. Do you think you would have been friends with your parents?
I didn't go to their school, but funny enough, I had my father's teachers. I don't know if that is more of a standout thing, because these people now knew my father.
Yeah.
At my age.
Yeah.
And now my father's going for parent-teacher night with his old teachers to talk about his son.
Yeah.
Which was... I always thought about that kind of thing. Because there was naturally that comparison. Like, well, how would your father feel with the way that you... I almost got that Mr. Strickland. Like, "Don't be a slacker." I even think one of them may have said that to me once. And one of my teachers that my father had... This is funny. He was from South Africa. Which doesn't matter. But he was bald. He was bald when my dad was in his class, and he was bald when I was in his class. So it was the same as Mr. Strickland. It's like, did that guy ever have hair? Like, completely bald.
Wow.
So it was that connection. I always thought of those things. Yeah, absolutely. I thought of what it would... I even think now, if I could go back, how would you react? Would you want to be friends with your parents? Would you interact with them? Would you want to see them back in that time?
Whoa. I don't know.
Do you think you'd want to be their friends, or would you want to punch them in the face?
That's what I'm thinking about.
Yeah.
Right? I'd probably be friends with my dad.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Not your mom?
No.
Why?
I don't know. Me and my dad are a bit of the same personality, which is probably a bad thing. But also because you have the same likes as the person and same interests and the same views on things, I think we would have more, we would be in agreement more on certain things.
Yeah, you'd see eye to eye.
Right.
Yeah. Because the thing that's another payoff, in a way, for Marty is that he's encouraging his father as an old man to, like, stand up for yourself. Like, don't let this guy step all over you, in reference to Biff. And then he sees that this has been a lifelong thing that he's just dealt with. So he encourages a young George, like, stand up for yourself. You know, show the woman that you love how you feel. Defend her honor. Mm-hmm. Swear, right? Mm-hmm. Goes, yes, swear, George. And then he even gives him the line, you know, if you put your mind to it, you can accomplish anything. And that 1 week of minimal time that he spends with his dad completely changes who his dad is later on in life. He's still himself, but proud to be who he was.
Yeah.
Science fiction writer, liking whatever he likes, not being ashamed of it. And you see him, you notice George in the first half of the movie, the old George is like slumped.
Yeah.
Nerdy.
Yeah.
And then after he hits George, his posture.
After he hits Biff.
After he hits Biff. Yeah. Thank you. His posture. Now he stands.
Yeah.
His shoulders a little higher.
Yeah.
So do you think
he that gave him... And then I think within that same scene or whatnot, it gave George the balls to stand up to everything else that had, which is why then he's so successful at the end of the movie, because then when Lorraine was dancing with him and this redhead douchebag comes in and cuts in and says, "Move, McFly," or I don't know what the line is anyway. But then George was backing off, but he's like, "No, I was dancing with her. I want to be with her.
Yeah.
I took out Biff. I'll take you out," kind of thing, right? Yeah. And then he stepped right back in, and stood up for himself yet again,
right.
So soon after such a major event.
Exactly. Do you think you would, in that same context, what words of wisdom would you bestow on your parents?
Oh boy, I have so many.
Without ruining their future. Because you've got to still be born.
I don't know.
You'd probably be like...
I don't know. I can't even be in the same room with these people sometimes. I question...
You know what? I don't care if I'm not born. I want to go back and be asleep. I think about that a lot. Myself. I'd probably be friends with my parents.
See you being friends with your parents. Me, I see myself running away.
And I love the idea of seeing them...
But I think it has also to do something with, like, how they grew up. Like, my parents were very... They're from a different part of the world. So, their culture and their background, it was more strict. It was more rigid. It was... So, that was the mentality that they grew up with. You know, it was very harsh. Mm-hmm, as opposed to, your parents came here when they were quite young. They speak the same language as you. I mean, my parents speak English, but you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Your parents don't even have an accent. Like,
yeah.
I think they're more Canadian than they are Italian. And heck, you don't even know how to speak Italian. They spoke to you in English all the time. It's
you
true.
You don't gotta give all this information to people. You're getting too personal now.
But it's true.
Okay, yeah.
So, like, you would have more of a first world experience with your parents. I wouldn't have that.
Okay, I get
Do you know what
saying.
I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. They're more acclimated to, like, the culture that we are in, whereas your parents were still... My parents were second generation from their native country, whereas your parents were that first generation.
You're right, we're getting too deep.
It's okay. But would you want to meet them, though? Like, what would you change? Would you even care?
I'd want to see them from far away to see what's going on.
Yeah, I'd want to... I just want to watch it.
I just want to be like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
But I would keep a pole, like, just distance away.
Do you know what's... I just kind of thought about this after watching it recently at the Roy Thompson Hall. It's not that crazy if you were to go back in time and encounter your parent. The possibility of them having a crush on you or feelings for you is a very high likelihood.
That's very weird for you to say that right now.
I know, but I was just thinking about it, and it's not as far-fetched when you think about it. Like, this movie makes it comedic, and it is comedic because he puts himself in a position that his father was supposed to be.
Because you're saying that they have that natural love for you anyway?
Well, that, but the person they eventually fall in love with have a lot of qualities that you naturally have. The way that you look, the way that you think, the way that you may act. They don't know any different. You know different. Like, you'd be completely grossed out by it. But it would be kind of odd to interact with that person who sees there's something about, like, you resemble things about your mother. Or I would resemble things about my father. And eventually that person, Lorraine, falls in love with George for some reason. Do you know what I'm trying to say? No?
Yes.
And it's freaking you out.
Yes.
But it's true, right? When you think about it. So that would be really awkward if you did. So I probably wouldn't want to interact with my parents. But I would want to go and visit myself.
That's weird.
You know why? Because the little me that's watching Back to the Future is expecting it. I wouldn't be surprised.
You really think this is real, don't you?
No,
I don't. Deep down inside, little Eric is saying time travel really exists. And there's a DeLorean out there that can actually do it.
I'm looking at the door thinking one day I'm going to be knocking at the door knowing that I'm watching Back to the Future.
Oh my goodness, you sound like Sheldon Cooper right now.
Yeah. When I saw that in the movie or in the television show, I totally understood. Because that's what I would do. Would you go revisit yourself?
Probably.
Not tell yourself that it's you, but just to go see yourself and be like, listen, kid. Here's some words of wisdom you need to know now that will help you later. That would probably be helpful. Not to tell you what's going to happen. Just to say, listen, here's some words of wisdom. So that when whatever does happen, that younger version of yourself will be like, I remember this person told me this once. That would be helpful.
I don't know, because then is that now the theory of interfering with future events? Because now if I'm telling myself, watch out for this or do that, now who I am now is being altered at a young age because a different thought has been put into my head.
Maybe.
So what if I don't turn out to be the charming self, my charming self?
Or you could be even more charming.
Impossible.
Well, I don't know. I always thought of those rules, right? Like,
you know what I mean? It's like when you tell a kid, you know, if you do this, this will happen to you. So watch it. And all of a sudden, now they're in fear.
Yeah.
And they live in this box, or they think that, okay, if I color out of the lines, bad things will happen, kind of thing. So I don't know. I think I'm with Doc on this one. I tried to stay away from anything and everybody that would undo this. All of this.
I think there's a couple things that I would want to, they didn't need to happen. You know? There's just little things that you'd be like, you know what, if this doesn't happen.
Yeah, but you know what? Those are the things that made you who you are.
True enough, but then there's certain things
like... They build character. They give you, you know, story. They give you...
Experience.
I don't know, like... Sometimes we get dealt cards that we don't necessarily know what to do with, but, you know, it makes us who we are.
But see, I would tell younger me, I'm not going to tell you what not to do. Do everything that you feel coming up. Don't question it. But remember this words of wisdom, whatever it might be. Even if it's something like, put your mind to it, you accomplish anything. Or if this happens, don't allow these feelings to permeate or take over you. Just go with it. You know, just little things that maybe if we were told, or even to say, listen, it's going to be okay. You're going to be all right. That's kind of reassuring to know. Because you go through stuff as a kid, it's like, this is not going to be okay. But if you know, like, my older me told me it's going to be okay, I can get through this, probably just end up feeling so much more better as that older person later on in life. No? Do you think you would like your younger self?
Oh, yeah.
What, little you or like teenage you?
All of me. That was amazing. Yeah, and it's not because I'm think highly of myself. I mean, other people have told me that I was just...
You were just the...
It was. People said I was amazing. They said I was funny. They said I was just always smiling. They said I was...
What about the teachers that kicked you out of class?
They were asking for it.
They were asking for it.
I think the only thing I would warn myself is to stay away from blue cheese. That's about it.
That's it.
Because I try everything. I'll eat anything once.
Blue cheese.
And blue That's cheese, I can't advice. Stomach the Listen, the, kid. The fromage bleu. No.
Okay.
No.
Without being so retrospective or looking too deep into it, where would you want to travel to if you had a time machine?
Ooh la la. I think I'd want... I think I like the... What's the era there? Where they smoke with the long sticks.
The 20s?
Is that it?
I think so.
Yeah.
Where they wore top hats and stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that era.
That's the era.
I think it's very classy. I think the music was fun. I don't know. There was I don't know much about it, but from what I've seen in films and what I've read of in history.
Like the Great Gatsby era?
Yeah, like... You know, when you go out to places, or even like in the 60s, like people were dignified. I mean, I'm a slob, but in the sense of like, if you want to go to the movies, you just put on a sweater and jogging pants or whatever. You know what I mean? There's no one to impress. But back in those days,
you go to people's houses in a suit.
You were presentable. You dignified yourself. You looked respectable. You looked put together and clean and. Like, I think that elegance of humanity has been lost over time. So those eras appeal to me. Not because I'm, you know, I always have to look at a 10 all the time. I could care less. But I do appreciate neatness. Do you know what I mean?
I get what you're saying. Absolutely. So you wouldn't want to be... If you had a DeLorean, would you want to...
And I think the 80s was fun. That's also the time I was born. So that would be great.
80s would be really fun to relive.
Yeah.
Going out and buying some good old vinyl records. Yeah. That'd be good. How about like historic events? Would you want to go to something like that? Would you want to witness the birth of Christ? Like Doc says. Or see the signing of the Declaration of Independence?
I don't know. Probably. Can't think of any right now.
It would be kind of cool to not interfere, but to be around for certain sporting events. Just to see it.
Mm-hmm.
Be around the crowd when it happened.
Yeah.
Stuff like that would be cool.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah.
It's so much, I guess, to think about.
It is. You can't ask that question and not expect it to be heavy. Cause it is heavy. There's that word again.
Heavy. Why are things so heavy in the future? Is something wrong with the Earth's gravitational pull? I can't help myself. every word in that movie just comes back around for full circle. So for myself, if I had a time machine, probably go 30 years into the future. Nice round number. I got you again. Well, this was a blast. A blast to the past, if you will. But I'm really happy we got to discuss Back to the Future Part 1 a little bit, get a little bit into the introspective conversation, which is always good.
That was fun.
I know Little Sparrow doesn't like it when we get heavy with the movies like Ferris Bueller, but you got to. That's what they're all about, right? So, will you want to do part two with me sometime in the future?
Clever.
You like that?
It would be good. I think this was fun. Like I said, it's not the type of movie, it's not my go-to movie for stuff, but when I do watch it or talk about it, I do get into it. It's fun.
Yeah, mm-hmm. They're great. Great trilogy. Would you put it in a top 10 of trilogies of all time?
Well, what other time? Trilogies.
You got Godfather, you got Dark Knight, you got...
Jaws has had their
four. Indiana Jones has four, but I really only count the first three. Aliens. I don't know.
Star Wars. Even though there's...
The original Star Wars, original. Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
You know what? I'm going to say yes.
Top 10?
Yeah, I'm going to say yes.
Where in the top 10?
I can't tell you that.
Somewhere in the middle.
Somewhere in the top 10. It's a good one.
Number one for me, naturally.
Good for you.
Even though some people don't like part two or part three.
I can't believe some people said that. I don't understand. We'll talk about that next time.
Very good. So, right now, there are... On Back to the Future Day, they released the number one issue of Back to the Future, the miniseries comic, written by Bob Gale. If you are in the Toronto area, you go to Cyber City Comics. They've got them there. Pick up a copy. It'll tell you how Marty and Doc meet for the first time.
There you go.
So I'm not going to spoil it for you, but if you want to know, they've told that story, along with other stuff that's coming up, which is going to be really cool. As well, caveofsolitude.com. Now that we're back, full force, rapid fire reviews. If you want any comic book reviews, come see us. Rapid fire reviews. Jeremy Scott writes the reviews for us. And he also has an Instagram page called Rapid Fire Reviews, so follow him. Really good, quick reviews if you want to see what's latest and greatest in comic books or what's not so good. He's got them. So we will be back soon.
So why don't you make like a tree and get out of here?